This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, November 11th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. Wealth inequality is a hot topic for Democrats running for president, with some candidates claiming that wealth inequality harms not just social cohesion, but the republic itself. Chris Edwards and Ryan Bourne are authors of the new Cato paper, Exploring Wealth Inequality. It's available now at cato.org.
Well, I think politically what's going on is that, you know, the economy is in the 11th year of economic expansion. Unemployment is really low. And, you know, the economy continues to be fairly strong with lots of job opportunities. So I think Democrats, they've been trying to make a big issue of income and wealth inequality for want of a better way to attack the current administration on economic policy. So our new study looks at wealth inequality, which we found is quite a different thing than income inequality. They're both measured in different ways, and they mean different things. And I think with wealth inequality, our overarching conclusion is that wealth inequality may have risen somewhat in the United States in recent decades, but it's actually a meaningless metric from the perspective of public policy. Wealth inequality, the thing that matters is not the level of it, it is the cause. Wealth inequality can be caused by cronyism, you know, insiders and businesses getting special deals from the government. It can be caused by capitalism in the best of ways, and by free market dynamism and entrepreneurs like Jeff Bezos getting wealthy because they're bringing innovations that benefit all of us. Or it can be caused by what we call crowding out or displacement. As the welfare state gets bigger, it displaces private wealth building by the middle class, which causes inequality. So the important thing is the cause of inequality. It's not particularly the level and the measurement, which is what the left-wing politicians complain about.
Now, well, I can follow on from that. So a good example of this is if you look across countries, actually. So there are three countries that we might consider have very similar, relatively high levels of wealth inequality. The United States, which most people consider a fairly capitalistic economy, notwithstanding some aspects of cronyism that we touch on in our paper. Countries like Russia and Kazakhstan have very high levels of wealth inequality too. Now, they're much more explicitly cronyist in their kind of policy approach. And then countries like Denmark and Sweden have extraordinarily high levels of wealth inequality too. And as Chris alluded to, there are different reasons for these across different countries. So in Denmark, for example, high levels of wealth inequality are reflective of the fact that there's huge, expansive welfare states. Now, what does that mean? Well, if the government is providing generous income in retirement, generous healthcare, and the like, then funded through broad-based taxes quite often, then middle-class people not only have little incentive to save significant amounts to cover those eventualities, but also as a result of paying more in the way of social insurance taxes, have less money left over to save in the first place. Couple that with the fact that usually these types of benefits, government benefits, are non-heritable, so you don't even get sometimes the kind of windfall further down the wealth scale of inheritance. Combine all those factors together, and actually big government programs in many countries actually exacerbate measured private wealth inequality. So you have this peculiar scenario where Piketty says, Zucman and others look at measured private wealth inequality and they say there's a huge problem here. And one of the things that we might do about that problem is to redistribute significant amounts through an expanded welfare state, when actually a big welfare state can be a contributing factor to high measured private wealth inequality in the first place.
So in our paper, what we say is, we can reduce wealth inequality by going after these negative causes of it. Cronyism, for one, and this displacement or crowding out caused by the welfare state. Those are sort of the bad causes of wealth inequality. But we think the main thing that generates wealth inequality in the economy is innovation and dynamism. Silicon Valley, high-tech firms, generating wealth and individual entrepreneurs getting wealthy, but at the same time, they are raising all boats in the economy. There was recently a good example of this. The Wall Street Journal did an article on the Aldi grocery chain, the German grocery chain that's spreading across the United States. The owner of this grocery chain is one of the wealthiest families in the world. They're a German family. They're worth something like $36 billion. But that wealth was generated by this company slashing prices for the poor and middle-class consumers, tens of millions of them across Europe and United States. So if wealth is being generated by innovation and new products and by entrepreneurs who are slashing prices, you know, who cares about it? We want the freedom of entrepreneurs to create new things and to have the incentive to do so. And that sort of innovation is raising all boats in the economy. So it's not a problem at all.
And I think another good example of that, a recent example, is Brian Acton and Jan Combe, the creators of WhatsApp. Now, WhatsApp currently provides a free phone service for, I believe, around 1.5 billion users globally. And as a result of that, those two individuals have become extraordinarily rich. They've got combined fortunes, it's estimated, of around $15 billion. So their success may have widened measured wealth inequality, but they've only been able to get rich as a result of creating vast value for consumers, often very poor consumers, all around the world by reducing communication costs on smartphones. So that's another, and you see this again and again. And I think that one of the big mistakes that progressive politicians are making in talking about wealth is almost instinctively they discuss it as if all top wealth and all billionaires and super wealthy people have only got that rich as a result in part of cronyism or benefiting from some sort of government monopoly privileges, perhaps IP laws and the like, or they have negative impacts. They suggest that these wealthy individuals have negative impacts on things like politics. Now, as a result of that, they advocate for wealth taxes and other mechanisms to try to reduce that top wealth. But of course, if you're imposing taxes on all wealthy people, irrespective of trying to delineate between these different effects, then yes, you may deter some of the cronyist activity on the margin, but you're also going to deter some of the innovation that leads to this broad-based prosperity at the same time.
Yeah, another false narrative, I must say, you hear coming out of some of the left-wing politicians like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, as well as columnists like Paul Krugman, is the idea that most of the individuals with top wealth in the United States have inherited wealth. You know, they didn't deserve it. It's just inherited money. They just sit back and enjoy this bond interest flowing into their accounts. That is getting less and less true all the time. In the last few decades, we have pretty good data on this. The share of the wealthiest Americans who got their wealth from inheritance has plunged from around 70% a few decades ago to just 40% today. The great majority of the wealthiest Americans today are self-made business people, men and women, entrepreneurs who have become very wealthy, often in places like Silicon Valley, by creating innovations that benefit all of us and are raising all boats. That is the main story of the U.S. economy today. We want to get rid of the cronyism. We think the welfare state is too big and is causing problems. But the main story of the U.S. economy with respect to the wealthy is a good one. Well, people are getting wealthy because they're generating economic advances that benefit all of us.
There is a claim that people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren make with respect to the disparity in wealth in the United States. And they argue that our political system, our republic, our democratic political system would be or is being undermined by extreme disparities in wealth. And they say that this is not sustainable, and they point to some historical precedents for that. Ryan?
Well, there's no clear evidence. People do make this claim, but there's no clear evidence that wealth inequality is undermining democracy in the US at the moment. First of all, the wealthy don't have homogenous political views. We can see this most obviously when we consider some of the major donors to political parties. You know, traditionally, you've got Charles Koch and Sheldon Adelson donating to conservative and libertarian candidates on the one hand, and you've got George Soros and others donating to progressive candidates on the other. There's not much class consciousness there in terms of their political viewpoints. And that's reflected amongst that lack of homogeneity is reflected amongst wealthy individuals generally. It is true that wealthy people on average do have some views that differ from the rest of the population. But even there's not much evidence that their preferences are dominating legislative outcomes at the moment. Yes, wealthier people on average tend to be more in favour of tax cuts, for example, and we had a major tax cut and reform, of course. But then at the same time, wealthier people also tend to be more concerned about budget deficits. They tend to be more in favour of free trade, and they tend to be more liberal in their social attitudes on issues passing through the courts. And on all of those issues, one could argue that things have moved away from their viewpoints significantly, particularly since President Trump was elected. Look, of course it's true, and it has always been true, that the wealthy help fund campaigns and lobby groups and are more involved in politics than average members of households in the population. But actually, most of the studies and evidence indicate it's not that easy to buy elections. And also that being super wealthy is not likely on the margin to have a much bigger impact on politics than being wealthy. The amount of wealth that you need to donate and be a major donor to a political party is not particularly high relative to the wealth of billionaires. So even if you were to take through a very targeted tax significant amounts away, it's unclear that you would even have any impact on how that individual would contribute in terms of political donations. So, you know, the evidence for this isn't really there. And actually, a kind of good point to end on this is that the American public doesn't think it's there either. A 2019 study and poll by Cato with YouGov found that 62% of Americans don't believe that billionaires are a threat to democracy. So far, at least, the American public is not buying into this viewpoint that the super wealthy are distorting politics to their own end. Remains to be seen how this will play out in the campaign, but that's something that we should be thankful for at the moment, I think.
I think one of the things that's going on politically is that it's hard for the left to make an argument to the American people that billionaires are bad for the economy, because when people think of billionaires, they think of people like Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, who've obviously added a lot to the economy, or Steve Jobs, and folks like that, you know, wealthy entrepreneurs. So what the political left has done instead is they said, okay, it's hard to make an argument that billionaires are bad for the economy. We're going to make an argument that billionaires are bad for our political system. And in looking into the reading up on this subject the last few months, I've been amazed at how many times the left has been making this argument that the billionaires are somehow undermining our democracy. But as Ryan summarized, the political science literature does not support their contentions that the wealthy people have a distortive effect on political outcomes or legislative outcomes. It's pretty interesting. So I think there's a bit of a false narrative going on here with the left's arguments about the effect of billionaires on politics.
Ryan Bourne and Chris Edwards are authors of the new Cato paper, Exploring Wealth Inequality, available at cato.org. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.